Coming up on TMS, one man's trash is another boy's porn collection.
I had the pho and the pho one.
Good old Kentucky, Tennessee.
The Ike Truman Show.
Crypto Bros 24/7.
Throbbing Purple Ring.
Best burrito by bike.
Like a horse on a Ferris wheel.
Banging it out with your big jerky stick.
Fighting the black pudding in Dungeons and Dragons.
Don't turn your upsie into an oopsie.
That nugget is sus.
Cartoon versions of Rick and Morty.
Burrito slippage.
Teased out news hair with jury. And more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
It's the cops. What should we do?
Ah, damn it. My motor coils were just getting warmed up.
Penis. Penis.
Where did you get that haircut? In the army? This is The Morning Stream. The Morning Stream.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to TMS. It's The Morning Stream for Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. I'm Scott Johnson with Brian Ibbett.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm all right, I think. I had, you know, I told you I had the pho and everything from the other day?
Yeah, yeah. Sunday. From Chinatown, yeah.
Yeah. You know, yesterday, I kind of had the all day.
Oh, really?
A little bit of the...
Yeah,
and I don't know what that was about.
The farts.
It could have
I'm
been.
Trying to figure out a way to make pho RTS.
Just really grumpy guts. But nobody else did, and they all had the same thing I did. So it's probably just me. I don't know.
Could have been.
Yeah. Who knows? But anyway, I'm fine. It's here. We're doing it. We got a show. We got all kinds of shite to do. Oh, speaking of, I have a recommendation.
Okay.
We had a burrito battle yesterday. An argument here at the house. About who makes the best fast food burrito. And I thought, well, who better than my morning show co-host, Brian Ibbett, to talk about this? Mm-hmm. Because you know, this is the sort of stuff we talk about all the time.
Sure, sure.
So the discussion came up because I'm of the opinion that if you go to Taco Bell, tacos are good, soft tacos are good, the hard shell, whatever it's called. I forgot what it's called. The wrap, the...
Oh, the Crunchwrap Supreme?
Crunchwrap Supreme's good. Uh-huh.
Chalupas are good. Chalupas I usually good. Go for a gordita or a chalupa or something.
Yeah, those are all right. Those are all fine. But I think their burrito has slipped in recent years. I think it's just too small. B, just not very well made. It just tastes bad. It's not great. It's not their best item on the menu, and they should have a proper good burrito on that menu, and it bugs me that they kind of don't.
All right.
On the flip side.
The one here seems to do fine. One of my mainstays is the Combo One, which is a Taco Supreme and a Burrito Supreme. And at least the one here does okay with their Burrito Supreme.
Yeah. And that's the other thing with Taco Bell is it seems like there's disparity between locations.
There totally is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that one in St. Cloud.
Yeah. Or St. George.
Or is it? Oh, St. George.
Yeah.
St. George.
Yeah, St. George.
St. Cloud is in... Minnesota.
Yeah.
I haven't been to the Taco Bell in St. Cloud.
I'm sure it's great. I'm sure those people
will write in and
let us know.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, and you're right about that one in St. George. I can't say it enough. If you're going through St. George, you need quick and easy food and you just want to be cheap. There's plenty of wonderful restaurants in St. George, but if you're just ripping through there, Taco Bell there is better than any Taco Bell I ever had. Anyway, so I decided yesterday I was going to get a burrito because why not? I'm feeling all... From the pho from the day previous.
Yeah, might as well ride that wave.
Yeah, why not? Why not just lean into it? I figured. And so I decided instead to grab an equivalent burrito, whatever their menu equivalent burrito was at Del Taco. And now I've got the reverse relationship with Del Taco that I have with Taco Bell. I think most of Taco Bell's menu is fine, and their burrito kind of blows, at least locally. I think. Most of the menu at Del Taco is not great, except I think the burrito is fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
It really is quite the conundrum, right?
Yeah,
the greatness of the burrito and the sadness of the rest of the menu.
Right. Yeah, kind of, yeah. Like, they've got fries and a burger there. I don't know who buys that burger. Someone does. But the point is, the big takeaway from the story is, if I'm... in a pinch and I'm like, I need a quick burrito. I'm sure there's a million great burrito places that are not fast food that are great, you know, amazing burritos, even if they're quick and fast. And maybe you can get a better burrito at a what do you call it, Qdoba or something. Those are all, sure. That's a step up, right? I get that.
Sure.
But in this range, that thing is bigger, has more ingredients in it, tastes better. I love it. So there's my review of the Del Taco burrito.
Taco. So there is one that's not too far from me off of Alameda. I haven't been to a Del Taco in forever. 20 minutes away. How much by bike?
Oh, yeah. See, now you have an excuse.
That's not a bad cycling path. If I do...
I love this. Go down there and get a burrito on your bike. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Why not, right?
Try it there. So this is good, because you could go try the burrito and then tell me if I'm nuts or not, you know?
Yeah.
Because maybe I'm full of it. Maybe this is not good and I just... Like everyone who tells me that Greenland's not as good as I said it was yesterday. I'm telling you, I love that movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. People are like,
how can
whatever.
They tell you how much you liked something? Come on, people.
I know. It's like one of the first responses I got was, meh, I thought it was bad. And I'm like,
oh, yeah,
okay.
I know. Dice Tomato, right?
No, it wasn't him. It wasn't Dice Tomato in this case. Maybe it was. Maybe he's sneaking around on other names. But it was. It's okay to like a thing, you guys. If you learned anything from me over the last 5 years, I'm going to incessantly talk about things I like that not everyone likes. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. I thought yesterday was fun when we looked at the day in history, so I want to do it again.
Oh, cool. All right.
I'd like to tell you something.
Sorry, we did. We realized, yeah. Today, by the way, I will tell you, this is one I don't even have to look at your calendar. Today, on this date in 1984, Ghostbusters was released to theaters.
Whoa. Shut it all down. The only good Ghostbusters movie released that many years ago. Fantastic.
That's right. I went to see it with my dad and his girlfriend at the time, who is not... my current stepmom took me to see it. And then we went across the street or across the parking lot to a pizza place that had an arcade in it. And I ate pizza and then played video games, played Battlezone.
Everything you're talking about sounds wonderful.
Welcome to 1984.
What a time we were living in, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
14, 15 year old kids in an arcade.
That's right.
Pizza. Ghostbusters. Yep. I mean, you all want to live when we lived, is what I'm saying.
Totally. Totally.
Oh,
that would be a day. That would be a day I'd have no problem going back to. Because, boy, I remember also the entire time at that pizza restaurant.
Yep.
In our heads.
Yep.
Could not get it out of our
heads. Yeah. That song, that Ray Parker Jr. was there to stay. Once it came in, you were stuck with it. I have a really cool version of that with... do I have it right here? Let's see. Yeah, I have this great version that's so it's this part of the beginning, and then we skip ahead.
Oh yeah,
it's an awesome mashup. I love it.
Right,
Beastie Boys.
That was a great combo.
Yeah, got another Thunder.
That fits together so well.
I have a Thunderstruck one as well. It's pretty good. Anyway, so here's what happened. Well, first of all, let's celebrate today's holidays. All right.
Sure.
Yeah, it's National Best Friends Day. Oh, that's adorable. And by the way, it says under holiday type, it calls it weird is the category. Why is that weird?
What a weird holiday.
Yeah, how weird. Best Friends Day, weird.
Fair enough.
National Name Your Poison Day.
What? Like, name your, like, pick your poison. What would you like to drink? Or
I think so.
Okay.
Right? What else would that? It doesn't give a description.
Why would they call it Name Your Poison Day?
I know, it's odd. And they don't have a link
like
to
National Have a Drink Day, National Do a Shot Day, something like that. But name your poison.
Isn't every day that anyway? Feels like it.
It is in this house.
here's another one. Let's see. National Upsy Daisy Day.
Okay.
Don't know how you're supposed to celebrate that. All right.
Upsy Daisy.
Sure.
Yeah. Is Upsy Daisy? All right. Let's clarify, because I'm, you know, now that I say it out loud. Is upsie daisy the thing that you say when you make a mistake? Because I always thought that was oopsie daisy and not upsie daisy.
Same.
Is upsie daisy what you do when you hoist somebody up onto a platform? All right, upsie daisy.
Like a little kid.
Like you're helping your kid get on top of their bunk bed or something.
Yeah, or a horse on the Ferris wheel or something. Or not a Ferris wheel, merry-go-round or something.
Right, exactly. You say upsy-daisy.
I think both exist. I think upsy-daisy is what you do with that, and then if you drop a blood pudding in the house.
That's when you say oopsie-daisy, or drop the blood pudding.
Oh, no. Now, what now? What for? Anyway, oopsie daisies.
Maybe you're pronouncing it. Maybe it's just we need to be pronouncing it oopsie daisy and not upsie daisy.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem.
I guess so. It's also Call Your Doctor Day. That's hilarious because I actually called my doctor this morning to change an appointment.
Did you really?
Yeah, because nice. I was supposed to do blood work on Thursday and I can't now because of a schedule conflict. So it's to next week, but I literally called her today. So that's cool. World Oceans Day. That's fine. And then.
When is World Oceans 11 Day?
Is it? So I'm supposed to celebrate, carry a very small Asian man in a box somewhere and have him break into things. Do that.
Remember what had the biggest influence on you in that movie.
I've said it enough times now that you've probably figured out the thing I remember most about Ocean's 11 is a tiny Asian man in a box.
It's not the fact that Matt Damon, no, that Brad Pitt is eating something in every scene he's in. He is constantly holding a container and eating out of it.
Yeah. How that guy's not 300 pounds, I don't know. I don't understand. Okay, some big events happened today in history. Did you know that in 18... We have some Tennessee listeners out there. All these folks in Lexington. No, that's Kentucky.
Memphis?
Memphis, Nashville? Tennessee is what I meant to say. Nashville, those cool towns. Oops.
Oopsie daisy.
you decided to withdraw from the United States in 1861. So there's that. Nice job.
Oh. Yeah. Well, didn't hold, though, apparently.
No, didn't
clearly.
Keep. Didn't keep, but they tried. Here's another one. Oh, that's interesting. The Antiquities Act, signed into law by the U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt. This was a big deal, actually. The act authorizes the president to restrict parcels of public land for use if they have conservation or historical values. Basically, the beginning of the park system and all that, which is really cool.
It's cool.
Major accomplishment by a Republican back when they. Back when they were cool, president. And they were at one time, man. We had it going on.
Yeah.
What the F happened? all right. Moving on. How about this one? Where was it? I lost it. It's a really big one. Oh, here it is. See, this is gnarly. We all think that bad stuff just happens now because we happen to be here all the time.
Sure.
Listen to this. 1783, a volcano in Iceland named Laki erupts and continues to do so for 8 months straight. The result is the death of over 9,000 people and a famine which lasts 7 years, killing who knows how many thousands more. All in Iceland.
Wow. It inspired 11 Bjork songs, too.
Yeah. Feels like. Lennon A. Lincoln.
The volcano is erupting. It won't stop. Yeah. When will the volcano stop?
Yeah, yeah. You can keep going.
Sure.
Know. You can go forever.
No, I'm done. I think I'm done.
There you go. Linda in the chat says that Lincoln was the last normie. Sometimes it feels like it. I'm not sure that's correct, but I don't know. What's his name? Normie. Was pretty cool. Who was the dude after FDR, World War II time? Not Roosevelt. I can't think of his name. I liked him. He was cool.
Eisenhower?
Truman. Eisenhower.
Yeah, Eisenhower.
Yeah,
Eisenhower. Ike Truman was a great president.
Yeah, Truman
loved
was a
Ike
great
Truman.
President. That Truman, President Truman. The Truman Show. Anyway, I liked Ike. Like the old phrase said. I mean, I wasn't
like
alive
the,
then.
Like
so.
The button on your shirt says you liked Ike.
Yeah. It just feels like Ike wouldn't tell people that vaccines put radios in your body.
Well, no, exactly. I think like we just need to get to a place where, and if, who knows if we'll ever get back to this place, but it'd be nice to get back to a place where you voted for the guy who does the most things that you want to have happen, as opposed to just saying, nope, he's Democrat, I'm only voting for the Democrat, or nope, he's Republican, I'm only voting for the Republican.
Yeah, I don't
want to get back to that.
Yeah, I'm sick. I tribalness can eat a turd and then choke on
it. Yeah.
Finally, this one here. Oh, Universal Pictures, 1912 began. That was the beginning of Universal Pictures.
Really?
Yeah, they would go on to make Waterworld one year.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Remember Waterworld?
Jurassic Park too.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll give them that one. Mm-hmm. But you know, Waterworld.
Can we give them that one?
Yeah, mainly Waterworld's one I'm thinking of. Okay. Mainly.
All right. Sure. Yeah, clearly the better of the two movies. You know.
How about this one? Final one here. Where'd it go? Oh, the novel 1984 by George Orwell was published on this day in 1949. So,
whoa. Yeah. So wait. The book, the novel 1984, published on this date, but in 1984, Ghostbusters came out on this date.
Yep.
Which was about people shooting stuff with streams.
Yeah. And by the way,
and not setting books on fire.
I would remind people that despite the fact that 1984 in the book was such a dystopic, hideous time, the actual 1984 turned out to be a badass year. That was a great year.
Oh, yeah.
If you were a nerd or a kid into movies or you were into music, whatever your thing was, it was the greatest time to be alive. 84, 85, name a better couple of years. You can't do it.
Purple Rain come out that year, too, for the album. Yeah, 1984, June 25th. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We're getting close to the anniversary of that, too.
Yeah. Van Halen's Jump, that was a thing.
That's right.
That year.
That's right.
The album was called 1984. Anyway, famous birthdays real quick. We got the Barbara Bush. She was born today in 1925. She's passed. I like Barbara Bush. She was nice. And I thought,
Come on, say it.
I thought she looked great on the Quaker Oats box. I really
there
did.
We go. That
was like a lot of people had problems with it, like issues with her being on the Quaker Oats box, but I really thought Barbara Bush really knocked it out of the park on that.
Sometimes you just need to hear the greatest hits.
Let's see. Jerry Stiller, George's dad.
Really?
1927.
Serenity Now.
Yeah, he just passed, sadly, not long ago.
Yeah.
Stop short.
Joan Rivers, also dead. She was born in 33 on this day. And then guy that invented the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee, born on this date.
Wait, it wasn't Gore?
Nope.
What?
Nope. Definitely not him. He's a poo-poo. Oh, and Juliana Margulies was born today.
Oh, she's still alive.
Yeah.
She's lovely.
Oh, and Frank Lloyd Wright. He's responsible for a lot of stuff, I guess. He did things.
A lot of cool architecture.
Yeah, yes. He's the man. All right.
Falling Waters.
Hey, Brian. Tell me about this email you got.
Yeah,
here.
Brucey Cakes wrote in and said, hey, Brian, just listen to the episode where Crazy Neighbor put a plastic hose reel in your recycling bin. My wife works for Republic Services, and she has stories all the time of people putting stuff in the recycling bin that is not recyclable. Yes, it might be plastic or have the little recycling symbol on it, but all they accept is cardboard that doesn't have any food grease on it, i.e. pizza box isn't cool, according to the rules, and bottles/jugs and cleaned out tin cans. Cleaned out tin cans! No clamshells from restaurants.
Okay.
But he means styrofoam, those little clamshell containers from restaurants, not actual shells from clams.
That makes sense.
But it basically comes down to who your driver is and if they like you. For Republic Services, they will either take it and possibly fine the account, and if it's a constant thing, they will flag the account and just not pick up. FYI, the trucks have cameras so they can see what falls out of the can. It's amazing the pictures that my wife will show me what people have tried to recycle.
Wow.
Love the show, Brucey Cakes.
So hose dispenser notwithstanding, there are some other worse things, it sounds like.
Are worse things, yeah. I'd love to see some of the sodas. But it bums me out that, like, even a pizza box, well, the pizzas we get, when we do get pizzas, we get them from Marco's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marco's. And your buddy Marco and Gino and come to California. Anyway, Marco's puts a sheet of wax paper or parchment paper under the pizza, and that keeps the box from getting greasy. And so we are able to recycle those boxes. But
so that's the reason you can't do those is the grease. Is that the
grease? Okay. Any food waste on recycling items is not good.
Okay,
and that
gotcha. Or any plastics, apparently, according to John.
Or any styrofoams, even if it's got the little icon on the bottom. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're now doing, cans, any kind of aluminum,
Tin cans, aluminum cans.
Cardboard's okay. But also our people said don't do cardboard if it's covered in paint, you know, if it's painted cardboard, meaning like a bunch of like branding on it.
I figure like some of those Amazon boxes, when they've got a promotion or something going on, there is so much printing on those Amazon boxes.
Yeah, or stickers with printing on them on the boxes, which, you know, again, is a whole nother layer of problem. But like in the case of a TV box, for example, those LG / Samsung TV boxes.
Oh, yeah.
They're just a big painted cardboard box.
Right. That can't be recycled.
They told me they couldn't take those is what our garbage people told us. So and they're not garbage people. They're waste disposal people, not garbage people. I don't associate with any garbage people.
Exactly. Garbage people are the ones who troll on Twitter.
So our beef jerky dealer, he's a waste disposal guy.
He is.
Did he send, I don't know if you've seen this, but he sent me some photos. I wish I had him here. I just put him in Discord. But he sent some photos of the inside of his truck. I've never seen some of that stuff. It's awesome.
I know he sent that to me too. He also sent me a photo the day after I talked about the hose reel in the recycling bin. He sent me a photo of somebody who stuck their hose reel in their garbage bin and said, check it out.
Oh, wow. Just
crazy timing. Yeah, hilarious.
I guess it's probably more common than we think, but.
Yep.
But that joystick is like this big old monster freaking flight stick in the middle of his truck.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. And you just. And then, like this morning, they were doing our garbage. You can hear him going, wah, 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 trying to bang it out and then put it back down. And now I just picture him with his big stick thinking about the jerk he's going to make.
Cool. You want it to be like the flight stick pros that we had in the 90s, where you had the not just the flight stick but the buttons on it. That's probably the thing that just like whacks the back of it like boom,
yeah, boom, bang, boom. Bang, bang. Takes whatever plastic you're not supposed to recycle out of there. Anyway, thank you for that, Brucey Cakes. Such a great name too, Brucey Cakes.
Brucey Cakes.
We appreciate the feedback. All right. Absolutely. Oh, if you'd like to send us emails,
please feel free to send us a photo, some of the photos your wife has of what people have tried to recycle, because I'd be curious to see.
100% would love to see that. Yeah. We'll show them on the show. Yeah,
exactly.
It won't
be a dead raccoon.
That wouldn't show. it wouldn't show anything like. We'd never see anything that would be super personal. No one would know who it is, right? It would just be a garbage can with stuff in it. Okay. Yeah, I figure if you put stuff in the trash. Did you ever go through a period? I'll admit to this. When I was, probably right around 1984, I was fascinated with garbage in that I wanted to go to, I would go to the dump with my dad to dump stuff for his work all the time. And boy, howdy, did I have to resist wanting to dig through and find treasure, like stuff that people threw out that they shouldn't have or that I thought was cool or whatever. I got a friend up the street had a whole porn collection you'd find in the trash because his neighbor would throw porn out all the time. So he always had these stacks of like old vintage, you know, Playboys or whatever.
Right. Hustlers. And
right. But in my case, it was like, ooh, what's that shiny thing? Or what's this? My dad's like, you can't dig through there. It's gross and dirty. But I could see myself being one of those people that goes out to a dump and fishes through there to find something rad.
My buddy John in high school was big into that, but he liked going to industrial parks and looking at what they threw away because he, you know, it was like bigger, cooler stuff. Like, oh, you can totally turn this into a bar or turn this into a fort or something like that.
Sure.
And at one point he did find a sit-down cocktail video game table. It didn't work, but the monitor was still in there. I don't know what game it was, but he called me up or came to rode his bike to my house and said, Brian, you got to go help me pick this thing up. Wow. And we carried that thing for a mile and got it to his place, plugged it in. Of course, nothing happened. No one's going to throw away a working cocktail video game table.
What was the game? Do you know the game?
I wish I could remember. It wasn't anything. It wasn't something memorable like, you know, Donkey Kong or Pac-Man or something like that. It was probably Bubble Bobble or What's the cops? What's the one cop chase? Something like that.
It's behind me.
Lock and chase. Maybe that's why I'm thinking of lock and chase.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't lock and chase then. I'm probably just thinking that. Never got it working. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. We did the thing where you take the sides off and you look at it, and you're basically looking for something as easy as a pair of shoelaces that are untied, mm-hmm. or a, you know, yeah. something that's like, oh, that's easy to fix. That's clearly the problem. Sure. Oh, everything's working. But
yeah, that's cool though. I would have taken home that cocktail machine.
Yeah,
hell yeah, I would have. But here's what you did, Brian. You missed this opportunity. All you had to do was
activate Pac-Man.
Had you done that, you'd have been set.
Clearly, if I could have activated Pac-Man,
if you'd have activated Pac-Man in that accent,
we gave it our best effort.
Oh, cooking mama. Is there anything she can't do? All right, we're going to do some news. Sit back and relax, everybody, and enjoy this. Here it comes.
In the News is sponsored by... You'll find quality in our corner.
That's right. The news is here, and it's brought to you by...
The Boop Show, indies and retro gaming at its finest with Scott and Brian Dunaway. Check the show live today at 3:30 Mountain Time at frogpants.tv or get it later on a podcast whenever. Details at frogpants.com/boop.
That's right. Or wherever you get your podcasts, just go grab it. I noticed it was on the Amazon. If you tell your Echo to play it, it'll play it. So I guess all that stuff. I registered everything and then never heard anything, and I guess it all just works. So I don't know. I think I can do Coverville there, can I?
You totally can.
Here, let me try this. Hold on. Play Coverville.
Wow, she's
confused.
Giving you an essay.
Alexa, cancel. All right,
she's giving you like about 1,000 reasons why she won't do it.
Kind of, yeah. She got real confused with that. All right,
I think you've got to say the Coverville podcast.
Oh, is that what it is? Let's try it now. Okay. All right, sorry. Play the Coverville podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that it does.
I'm going to read you the XML file before I play any music.
That is kind of what she does. Here is the iTunes header, but others may not use it. Exactly. Alexa, cancel. Oh my gosh, she's playing it. That's awesome. There it goes. All right.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to set off anybody else's things at home.
No, you didn't say her name, so you didn't. You did just fine.
Oh, I thought I said it a couple times. All right. An elephant herd is in the news. We got elephants, you guys. Look out.
Okay.
Elephants are here.
We've got elephants.
That's what you call them. You call them a herd. And they razed, that is destroyed, a 500-kilometer path of destruction after escape from a Chinese nature reserve.
Oh, no.
It reminded me of Greenland had a moment of that. Oh, no. What am I thinking of? Not Greenland. The new thing we're watching that both of us are watching. There was a zoo thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm really digging that show.
Yeah. How far are you into it? We've got two episodes left.
You're way ahead of me. I'm two in is all.
I'm really hoping that the destination that we see the destination in the show, because I will just say Red Rocks. I love Red Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Love
they're
to
all
see it in the show.
I heard the reference in the second episode even. The family in that cabin were like, oh yeah, we used to go there all the time before the world went weird, and I went, oh, we end up there. I just saw Brian Regan's special was in Red Rocks.
Oh, did they? Is that the Netflix thing? Is from Red Rocks?
Yeah, it's awesome. You should watch that.
Ooh, I can't wait to watch it. That was a show that I was thinking I was going to pay $75 to go to, and I'd much rather just have it free with my Netflix subscription.
Yeah. Well, I think I recommended that one. You must have missed the part about Red Rocks when I recommended it. But
you did. Well, it was how long ago?
It was a month ago, 2 months, something like that.
Oh, really? Yeah. That recent?
It's pretty recent. Yeah, it just came. I mean, it's got to only be a couple of months old. But he did it. I think I made a big deal about how it was the first comedy concert I'd seen with actual laughter because there's an audience. But also, they all had masks on, which was weird, and it was outside.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about that. And I think we even talked about how beautiful Red Rocks was.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I can't believe that venue exists. It's amazing.
Amazing place to see anything, any concert, any...
It looked insane.
Performance.
It looked insane.
Yeah.
And the acoustics must be crazy there. It must be just so cool.
Crazy. The acoustics are insane, Scott. They're insane.
I don't even like an amphitheater, but that's basically a perfect amphitheater.
It is.
Normally those kind of bug me because it feels like, I don't know, kumbaya kind of camping bullshit. But that is not.
Really?
That. Yeah. I don't know why. You know what it was? All my scouting years when I was a kid, when I was in scouts, there was always an amphitheater. Different sizes, some mostly small, and you do skits there, and I hated it. I hated those things. So whenever I see like an outdoor venue, like the Hollywood Bowl, I see that, and I just go, ugh. I don't know why.
Really?
I'm sure I'd love to see something there.
Oh my God, I mean, seeing a concert with the sky above, I can't tell you how many shows I've seen at Red Rocks where it rains just as whoever the band is performing a song that contains the word rain. You just notice it all of a sudden. It's like, I've stood here before inside the pouring rain, just like us.
I watch the rains down and down like that.
Here comes the rain again. She's singing about now.
I mean, I liked, but see, this is the thing. I would like it in that kind of Red Rocks, you know, desert canyon looking business. That's where I would thrive. So it's for some reason I have this distinction. That's cool. This other stuff is less cool. I don't know why.
Okay. All right.
It's a weird thing. No skits for me. That's right. All right. Anyway, so a herd of 15 elephants. How many elephants do you have to have before it's a herd, I wonder? Probably more than two.
I would say six is a herd. Anything six or more is a herd.
Okay. Okay. You know what? It has to start somewhere. Six may as well
be. It's got
to
start somewhere.
Well, a herd of 15 wreaked havoc in China, trampling crops and causing more than $1 million worth of damage, and the animals escaped from the nature reserve last year. Or after they escaped from a nature reserve last year. Wait a minute, last year? I guess this is a fresh escape. Anyway, the elephants have made
they've got a problem on their hand.
It's a 311-mile journey through the southwestern province of Yunnan from the nature reserve of Jishubengbana in Yuxi, a city of 2.6 million people, leaving a trail of destruction in their wake. It is unclear why they left their preserve or their home there, but on their travels, the elephants have caused 412 separate incidents of damage, financial losses around 6.8 million won.
412 separate incidents of damage.
That's a lot. It's a lot.
It is a lot. It is hilarious. It's just a weird
56 crazy. Hectares of farmland in these counties. Let's see. The creatures have also caused significant disruption to locals. Last week, residents were told to stay indoors and pedestrians and vehicles evacuated in the town of Ishan after the elephants roamed the streets for 6 hours. Dude, these guys are out of control, man. What do you do? What do you do about 15 wild elephants? You go and do you trank them all? And then,
how do you, I guess, right? I mean, do you, if you can stop the first two or three in the front, can you stop, like, will it stop the rest?
I don't know.
It seems like how you'd have to do it, right?
Does word spread to the front? You know, do they go, oh, shoot, the humans have got guns?
Well, no, I mean, I'm thinking that's why you start with the front, because then if the front ones stop, the back ones will be okay, we're done.
And elephants are dumb. You put a rope on their foot and they think they can't move. So why is this a problem? I feel like. I don't know. I feel like these elephants are taking the piss, as the British say. They're taking the piss.
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? All right. We played Among Us. You know that game, Among Us.
We've played it many times as part of our deal here, yeah.
Yeah, well.
Part of a play date.
Well, here's the beauty. Among Us-shaped McNugget has now sold for $100,000 U.S., $100,000 for a chicken McNugget.
$100,000.
Chad, here's a picture of it. No, that's a fly. Why isn't this showing up?
Do I have it blocking or something?
I think I'm blocking this photo, which is no good. Oh, we'll look at the eBay listing. How about that?
I'll look at it.
Oh, they've taken it down.
Oh, is that why? So the photos are... Well,
it says the bidding has ended on this item, but then they... Oh, no, there it is. Okay. $99,997 for this thing. 184 bids. It's literally just got like two little feet.
It's right. I didn't think that chicken McNuggets had any other shapes. Those are... They like have a mold. They're processed.
Yeah,
like
but into. I guess, but that's the problem, right? Maybe the mold... The entry point of the mold had a weird thing, or maybe the whatever the hell this coating is squeezed out the side. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, could be. Could be.
Lendonade says, as an NFT? No, I think it's just dollars. Yeah, it's just dollars, man. There's no NFT on this. Plus, eBay does not yet take... They don't do crypto. Yet. But, yeah, man. We missed our opportunity is what I'm saying. There was an opportunity
here. Clearly.
Yeah, we should have been one of these early bids. Shipping was $4.15 for this $100,000 freaking thing. I wonder if they... I mean, if they bought it, can you confirm that they paid for it? Because this seems nuts to me.
It does seem kind of ridiculous, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It'll be like one of the eBay things that I got with these damn laptops, which is, now that I've won the auction, can you tell me what's the video processor in there? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't want it now. Thanks, yeah. Bye.
Yeah. Also, why, can I ask this?
Yeah,
why sure. Is a listing for a chicken McNugget with two legs? Why are all the related sponsored items fake money with Trump's face on it?
Because you bought fake money. Did you buy your fake money on eBay?
No, I got that on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
So there's $1,000 bill.
I was just looking at what you may have been shopping for.
There's $1,000 bill you can buy.
Because if you're dumb enough to buy a chicken McNugget, then you're dumb enough to buy fake Trump money.
I think you're right.
It's got to be, right?
There's a lot of these. Why are these? Why? What? Oh, there's a Kobe Bryant $2 bill. That's kind of cool. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. That's a weird thing, man. I don't know. Really, I try not funny. To make sense of this stuff. All right, moving on. By the way, the listing was Among Us shaped nugget was the what sold this thing. This was nugget. In a combo meal from the BTS meal. So this is that K-pop version of the thing. The seller promised.
Did that come with 8 pieces of chicken?
Did they all look indiscernibly the same as each other?
Right, with just slight differences to their hair.
Oh, man, we're going to get in trouble. The BTS army, they'll kill you. They will kill you.
They will kill us where we stand.
They will eat the flesh from your bones and then bury the rest in the backyard. That's how mad they get. anyway, let's see here. The food product has an average expiration of a date about 14 days. So they're delivering it within edible time. So it's still edible. Let's see here.
If you're paying $100,000 for a chicken nugget, I think you laminate that. You put it in resin or something.
Oh yeah, there's no way you eat this, right? Why would you? Oh my gosh.
Even if it's still within edible time.
Yeah.
Freaking chicken?
I know.
I guess it's cooked chicken, but still, I would not say.
It's barely chicken though.
14 days. Jeez. Yeah,
this is that weird pink flesh stuff they get off the bones or whatever. It's not even real chickens.
Right, exactly.
It says, the guy even said in the listing, quote, I have Szechuan sauce at buyer's request and we'll ship some with the nugget.
Of course he does.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce.
I mean, you know, it's a big hit. Those two, they just, I just saw a video. They're putting Rick and Morty in Fortnite of all things.
And, oh, really?
It looks like cartoon versions of them. It actually looks really good. Like, I don't want to play it, but like visually, it looks like not just crap thrown together. They look like somehow you put Rick and Morty into that world and it works weirdly, kind of 2D and 3D. It's weird. Yeah. But yeah, you can't look. All I know is if I was the Among Us developers, I'd be a little annoyed that a nugget shaped like one of your characters went for so much money and you will see none of it.
And you'll see none of it. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll get none of that. I guess they're doing fine. They're making millions, so they're fine.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Whatever. I would love to. I mean, I just love to see one of these. The problem is people who have $100,000 for a nugget, they don't listen to podcasts. So we'll never be able to connect with this guy.
No, they listen to podcasts, but it's just the Joe Rogan show.
Right. Or they just listen to what's a bunker? What is it? The app where you'd sit and listen to Crypto Bros all day. What's that called? Crap.
Oh, not Clubhouse.
Clubhouse, that's it, Clubhouse.
Oh, Clubhouse, okay. Yeah.
Clubhouse is just, you go in there and you listen to people just rub each other's nub.
Is it Crypto Bro 24/7?
Oh, it's horrible, dude. I got in on that thing. I got an invite, and I thought, well, let's check this out, see what's going on. Yeah. I'm just hunting around for anything, and all I ran into was guys. So you'd go in there and go, so thanks for coming. We're here to talk about how you can stack your Ethereum earnings by doing... I'm like, okay, let's get out of this one. I'll go to this other one. And there's just two guys, and they're going, yo, bro, I'm telling you right now, sell your Bitcoin tomorrow, but buy back on Wednesday. Like, it's just, okay, what is this? I don't want to do this. This is lame. So I got out.
Yeah, good. Good man.
Deleted it from my phone. All right, here's... oh, this is good. Oh, this is great. Okay. So this lady, 46 years ago, lost her wallet on a night out, and they found it in a theater and got returned to her 46 years later. This is crazy.
Wow.
An employee working at a remodeling project in a historic theater in California found a wallet that was lost by a patron 46 years ago. Tom Stevens said he was in the crawl space underneath the balcony at the Majestic Ventura Theater in Ventura when he found the wallet and the ticket stubs, empty drink containers, and candy wrappers down there. Ew. Let's see.
Yeah, I think I'd leave it. Thanks.
Yeah, I think I'd probably not take that. The wallet contained some old photos, a ticket stub for the 1973 Grateful Dead concert, and California driver's license, which expired in 76. Steven said he searched online for Colleen Diston. The name of the driver's license was unable to find any info. His boss, Loanne Woldyart, suggested he use the theater's Facebook page and attempted to find the owner.
You're giving a lot of people's full names in this article.
Yeah, they really do. It's like a freaking docs article here.
Yeah.
Let's see. It says the post was shared. A whole bunch of people saw it. I guess it finally reached her. She was a lifelong resident of the area. It says a lot about our society that the people are looking for a human story and something to feel good, Diston told the Ventura County Star. Said she lost her wallet while watching a movie in 1975, although... Well, I guess the ticket stub or something else. Anyway, she said she called the business the next day, discovering her wallet was missing, but the disappointment in learning it had not been found by employees.
Disappointing that the Ventura Theater doesn't clean as thoroughly. Like, it took them 46 years to clean under that chair?
Yeah, that seems like a lot. There was a little kid born that day that she lost it, and he's 46 now. So there's your perspective. Diston said the cash was not in her wallet because whoever removed it probably just tossed it into this crawl space. But she was overjoyed to be reunited. She got her photo.
Yeah, somebody probably found it and then like, Grateful Dead.
Yeah,
and lame. Tossed the rest of it.
Lame. Yeah. Pictures of kids, lame. Anyway, fun story. Aww. Fun story to wrap your heart around, Brian.
I wonder what the movie was. What did she watch in 1975?
Let's see what the hot movies were. Biggest movies. 1975. This is a pre-Star Wars era we're in here.
Yeah, so I'm thinking like
top 30.
Serpico? Is Serpico 1975?
Oh, you're close. You were so close. Dog Day Afternoon. Which is a lot like Serpico.
It's another Pacino.
Yeah. It's a great movie. That movie's awesome.
Yeah.
Jaws, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Nashville.
Oh, Jaws was 75, of course, yeah.
The Holy Grail, that's a fun one. Stepford Wives, Night Moves, Grey Gardens, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
She was watching the Apple Dumpling Gang. Oh, Rocky Horror Picture was 75 as well.
Maybe she thought her wallet was toast. She threw toast. Oh shit, that was my wallet. Oh, we're screwed.
That's probably it right there.
3 Days of the Condor, Sunshine Boys, French Connection 2, The Passenger, Boy and His Dog. What else?
Rooster I need to Cogburn. See 3 Days of the Condor.
I've never saw that, yeah. Shampoo is in here. Adventures of the Wilderness Cindy Family. What the hell is that? Oh, Rollerball. That's cool. We watched that for Film Sack. James Caan. Yeah. That was a good year. An okay year. Death Race 2000. We've seen that.
We've seen that one. Yeah. We've dipped our toe into 1975 on Film Sack. Yeah. Sure.
Escape from Witch Mountain's on there. Anyway, I'm going to assume she saw... Let's say she saw Monty Python and the Holy Grail, because that's cool. We'll give her that.
There you go. That'd be a good choice. Better than the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Man, we were 5 years old then. Is that weird? It's weird.
It is weird.
Moving on to this. That's it. That's the. We're done. We're moving on now to the break. That's what we're doing. We're going to play a song, and when we return, Justin Robert Young will be here. We're not going to necessarily take the path we were used to today. So stick around to find out what that means. Before that, though, we have a song. Brian, will you play it?
I will play. Well, I'll tell you what it is, and you'll play it technically because you know that was. That's how things work. Tennis System is the name of a band. Yes. And these guys have a brand new album coming out called Autophobia, Fear of Oneself. These guys are from L.A. And for the title track, they teamed up with Chadwick Johnson, who is from the band Hundredth. And this is, like I said, the title track. This album comes out late summer 2021, but you're going to get to hear it right now. Here is Tennis System and the song Autophobia.
That sounds great. All right, we're going to take this break. We'll be right back. Please stand by.
About me, a few years ago, I got to be an extra in an Adam Sandler movie, and it was very fun.
Poo poo.
Sorry, Wayne.
I love the smell of polyurethane in the morning. This is the Morning Stream.
Like to tell a central tremor that if he thinks saying that Dog Day Afternoon and Serpico are similar movies is somehow weirdly racist, I don't know what to do for you, buddy. I can't.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know.
I can't help you. He thinks I'm on a roll because we were talking about how all the BTS boys look the same to us. thinking that means we're saying all Asians look the same. It's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
But that's what he's thinking. Essential Tremor, I don't know why you come to the show and me here live. I don't know why you drive yourself here in the morning. I don't know why you like it. I don't know what you're doing. All right, Brian, hey, why don't you remind me what that song was again so I don't forget it?
You bet. That song was Tennis System from their upcoming album, Autophobia. That is the title track.
Oh, very nice. All right. Let's get Justin in here. You know him as Justin Robert Young. Some of you call him Jury. We just call him That Guy. It's not true. We don't do that.
That guy. That Tuesday guy.
That one guy.
The Tuesday guy?
Yeah, that
By one the way, guy. Did you know, and we're going to ask him about this, he and Brian did a Demio live stream like a couple weeks ago, or a week ago, after I thought of the idea, but before I talked about
it. Oh, it was your idea, was it? Okay, I see. Well, we should bring that up. Let's do that after this.
These are their stories.
Oh, I'm terrible with names.
Welcome to the part of the show we look forward to most on Tuesdays. That is the introduction of our good pal, Justin Robert Young. Good welcome. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Good welcome to you.
A good welcome to you boys as well.
It's nice to have you here. I hope you're well. So you guys also played that that Demio thing. What did you think of your role playing VR experience? I heard that this is the first time hearing that you guys played. That's awesome.
Have you played it?
No, but Brian's planning a thing this weekend for a charity.
We're doing a live stream of it for Alzheimer's charity this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, for real?
Very exciting. Yeah.
So, did you guys have fun with that?
Oh, dude. Beat the Elven Queen without taking any damage.
What?
Nice.
What? Oh my gosh.
NBD.
You know what this proves? You play video games that aren't Hearthstone. That's what this proves. Can you believe it?
I mean, look, I like what I like. I've actually played a lot of Oculus, but it's really more of a gathering tool. Like, I just like playing it with friends. It is the greatest multiplayer experience I think I've had since like GameCube, like things were like old consoles that all my friends would just gather around either because we were teenagers or in college.
Well, I think it's awesome that you've now entered into the fray of hardcore role playing games, and I expect soon that you will run your own D&D campaign, and I'm really looking forward to it. So let's know how that goes. Hey, not really though. We are happy to have you here, and we did something a little bit different this week. You and I were talking offline about documentaries and stuff, and
yes.
This must have happened because we had a raid from you yesterday, and a bunch of your listeners were piling in here, and just the first thing them out of their mouths was Justin watched Murder Among the Mormons, and it just kept repeating it. And I thought, oh, okay, cool, he did watch it, and now we get to talk about it. So. You gotta let me give you a little bit of background on why I think this.
Well, I've got a lot of questions.
I'll bet you have tons.
I've got a lot of questions.
Here's the only background I'll give you because it's my own personal.
This will mostly be about this movie. So all of your vitriolic hate messages about my political conversations can be shelved temporarily.
Yeah,
please. Yeah.
Put it in park is what we're saying, everybody. All right, so
Ad pool favorite Justin Robert Young. Don't worry. You can keep all of your commentary about how I'm Hitler to yourself.
Keep your Justin as Hitler business to yourself. All right, so here's the just from my perspective why I wanted to have any setup on this, because otherwise you've seen it so you know. But this is specifically a big deal for me. Because the years were like 84, 85, somewhere in there.
I would actually love to just ask you questions.
Okay, go.
I feel like
ask me questions.
Get to the
go.
Same information, but I really am curious to just ask you.
Go for it.
Like, what do you remember about this growing up?
Almost everything. So it was such a big deal locally because there were these murders, and these murders were happening via car bombs and house bombs and, you know, like these weird bombings. That it seemed like terrorist attacks that nobody knew quite where they were coming from. And there was a lot of confusion about it and a lot of sort of local panic about it. And nobody knew what the motivations were in the beginning or anywhere for a long time. Nobody knew, like, on the ground. Maybe the investigators knew. And it seems like in that documentary, they explain a lot of that. But for us, you know, just citizens of the state where the attacks were happening, we didn't know much about any of it. And all we did know is that it seemed like they were serial and they were happening on a more frequent basis. And it felt like just about anybody could get hit by them. But then certain details start coming out, and there's stuff like connected to the Mormon Church, which is, you know, headquartered here, and stuff about like the ancient document trade, which I guess is a giant thing here. But this was all kind of.
Right, so did you know about that part of the story growing up? Like, because certainly the world, the Mormon world, is something that is kind of fascinating to many people, mostly because it has become so culturally relevant in a part of the country that is not remote or cut off, but certainly culturally not a part of the West Coast scene and not a part of the East Coast scene, not really even a part of the Midwest world. Like the Denver and Salt Lake City are kind of their own vibes no matter what.
Yeah.
But it's also a very young religion, mm-hmm. which means that like it made a lot of sense in the documentary as they were going over the fact that like, all right, this document trade of finding contemporary documents along with the founding of the Mormon faith is something that's feasible because you're not finding it at the bottom of, you know, a pile of silt in Israel somewhere, right? Like you're finding it in Buffalo. Like you're like it could be underneath somebody's McDonald's cup because it's something that happened 100 and some odd years ago as opposed to thousands of years ago. And you have the benefit of modern writing utensils. Were you aware as a youth of that fascination of Mormon collectors and just its relation to the faith in general?
No, not at first. But as the story began to unfold and we learned more via the news or whatever at the time, things like the Salamander letter and these different documents, these names started circulating. And I understood, you know, I'm like 14 years old. I understood that that meant, oh, they found some, in theory, they found these, some documents. And some of these, I guess, are, you know, they were reported to be, oh, really weird stuff or super contradictory to the church's founding. Is it going to really shake things up and piss a lot of people off? And then when we, and then the part that I remember
just to catch people up so they're not totally left in the dark here. The letter that is found that kind of begins our story of this document collector is a letter that is from contemporary of Joseph Smith that says instead of him being led to the golden plates by the angel Moroni, it was by a white salamander.
Sorry, I haven't heard it pronounced Moroni in a long time. That's fantastic. But yes, you're correct.
That's how you say it, right? Is Moroni?
It's Moroni technically, but it's just funny to hear other people say it in a different way because there's like a Moroni.
I didn't know. In my mind, he's Italian. He's Moroni.
Yeah, it's totally fine. People do it all the time. But anyway, the point is like yes, like there was this. There were okay, so people understand, and the documentary's on Netflix. You can watch it. And they explain all this, but the conceit is one of the conceits with the church is that in the early 1800s, Joseph Smith had a vision, and in the official record, the vision is he's visited by God and he's told kind of what to do and by angels and what to do. All right. Again, it's religion. So, you know, every religion's got a fun backstory.
That's the thing. This is the only thing weird about this one is that it happens sooner.
Yeah, it happens sooner. Like, just remember that. Remember that. That's one of it's actually kind of the hard part to explain to people is this. Yeah, it happens sooner. So it seems weirder, but it's not all that weird. But anyway,
just because it was closer to television dinners, like, doesn't mean that all the religions don't have the exact same parts.
Right. So this is like 18, whatever it was. I forget the exact day and or dates.
Yeah.
Anyway, the official record is that. Well, this supposed salamander letter was supposedly written, penned by Joseph Smith, claiming that all of this interaction actually happened with this, like, lizard, salamander.
A lizard led him to the plates and not the angel.
Which caused a complete freak out among everybody who heard it. Like, most people were like, that isn't right. And other people were like, well, what if it is? And then the church got interested because they want to own as much historical documentation as possible, even when it's boring stuff. And in this particular case, this is not only boring, but potentially damning or potentially controversial to the point that they'd, you know, have to address it or whatever. And then, trust me, plenty of controversial things in the church's history they'd have to explain all the time. This would be one more of those. But that got real.
So you remember the theological freakout. Like, that was something that punctuated into mainstream life in Salt Lake City for a teenager or child, wherever you were in your development.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like the A block of whatever the Mormon version of the 700 Club is.
Yeah. Keep in mind, this is a time in my life where I'm like, ooh, yeah, that. Oh, yeah, interesting. Buzz, buzz, buzz. Hey, that girl's hot. Can I take your car? Because I don't have my license yet. Like, I'm
that was all on the back of the newspaper. You know, right? Like, you were, if this were a movie, you'd be reading the headline just so you can tear off a piece of the newspaper and write down somebody's phone number.
Exactly. That's totally exactly right. So the next part of that is that they go through all of this in the movie, but it's discovered that those are forgeries. None of it was real, and the one. Specifically the salamander letter, which he supposedly, this Mark Hoffman guy supposedly was going to sell for like $300,000 back to the church.
Well, he did. No, the salamander letter was sold. What is controversial.
It was never delivered though, right? Like no one ever got
another treasure trove of documents,
right?
That has even more explosive claims to it, up to right. It, including that it wasn't Joseph Smith who initially found the plates, and like there was a whole nother thing that was like on the verge of being sold. Meanwhile, he's also selling the oldest documents ever found in American history.
And
now we can kind of get to sort of the breaking down of the documentary itself.
Yeah,
I loved it. 10 out of 10. High recommend to everybody.
Same, it's good.
Largely because my biggest problem with our modern era of documentaries is that nothing is a documentary anymore. Everything's a documentary series. Mm. And sometimes that's really good because you would think, documentaries, oftentimes if they're jamming themselves into an hour and a half, 2 hour runtime, you're going to wind up summarizing things that maybe would be better if you blew them out a little bit. So maybe thinking of documentaries by default as 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours is a better way to go about it. And you know, Ken Burns kind of set his own template there. We've kind of moved more into that realm. The problem is that a lot of stories do not need to be 4, 5, 6 hours.
Right.
They could be 2.5, 3 hours. And you know, take that little extra so it's not a movie length, but it can chop into three parts really easily. Murder Among the Mormons is a chef's kiss, perfect 3 hours that all have their own thing. The first episode is all about the crime that leads up to these horrifying things that happen. The second is all about determining exactly who did it, and in that you get into the idea that these are forgeries. And the third, which I would say now to people that are dead set and sold on watching it now, to tap out and come back to listen to this later, because it is a great decision by the makers of the documentary, but they decide that they are going to hold back not only who did it, but also the fact that they have extensive recordings of the perpetrator of the murders talking exactly why he did it. And let me just say this, if I could just soft tease, it's the most Mormon serial killer you will ever hear in your entire life. Like, very polite, very well-spoken, very like very courteous in explaining. Like, you would think that this was just a regular conversation with a nice guy, the way that this person is explaining his methodology, motivations, and step-by-step actions that he took. These horrifying murders.
Yeah, yeah. And almost killing himself in the process. Still some.
Yeah.
Questions.
All right. So here, spoiler alert. Now let's talk more about exactly what happens, because this was a journey for me. I didn't know anything about it. I presume, Scott, that your knowledge of this as it went on as a news story was the fascination that indeed one of the guys blown up in this series of three bombs.
Yeah.
Is indeed the bomber himself.
Yeah, nobody saw that coming, by the way. That was like a big shock, because everyone was like, oh, this poor Mark Hoffman guy, he's just a documents dealer. What? Look, his poor Toyota MR2 got blown up. I remember specifically the MR2 part because I was in love with that car. I thought that was the coolest, like, stock sort of race car you could buy from a, you know, Toyota or Honda or whatever. And I loved that car. So when I heard this news that it blew up in the back of his MR2. I remember thinking, no, not an MR2. That's terrible. So I have that just burned into my head.
And they have this great sequence of him and his second in command just being like the biggest nerds when they get money, and he just buys that car and they're just driving out to the desert and shooting Uzis.
It's really awesome. Something,
just,
man.
Just what great character building.
Yeah, it's very good. And my favorite dude in the whole thing is that really the guy with the voice that's a little messed up. I'm not sure what's wrong with his voice. They don't address it, but
he's awesome. Yeah. So he's the second in command, but he has this voice that for wrestling fans, he sounds like Howard Finkel, the old World Wrestling Federation announcer. Yeah.
And he's wearing like, you know, Mr. Pennyworth freaking clothes from like the guy from the Monopoly board, or what's his, I can't think of his name. Is it Pennyworth?
Uncle Pennybags.
Yeah, but Rich money Uncle bag Pennybags. Or Pennybags. Yeah, he looks like him. He dresses like that.
He's got like the waistcoat with two chains coming off his like center button. Yeah. Like it is.
Wow.
He looks like a Coen Brothers character.
And he is as earnest as you can be about what he's earnest about. Like, he's there to share his side of the story. Some of those people that were like, you know, just in it for the document trade, super interesting perspectives. Like, it's a very good documentary. The only thing I don't like about it is the title. I just think the title's salacious and dumb.
Which I think they took from some... It's a quote that ends their initial big montage of like the outside news coverage covering it, and so it is like it's a hacky television 80s line that they decided to use as the thing. But
that's a good point. Like, if
you think about it, because you mentioned to me that the title bothered you, and I'm like, yeah, but it kind of says everything you need to say that makes that story unique, because it is unique because it's a Mormon story.
You're right. It's like what the Miami Herald would have as their headline when they were reporting it, because it did make national news. But that's what everyone else would put in their headlines. They would say murder among the Mormons, Salt Lake City, time stamp, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's, you're exactly right.
Dateline.
Yeah.
And also, like, there's a reason why, because it's inherently, to the mind of the average person, kind of contradictory, because Mormons have such a genteel reputation around the world. Now, obviously not politically, please. I'm not trying to gaslight you, Tadpool. But certainly in terms of the average person, if you say, "Oh, what do you know about Mormons?" they would say, "Oh, they're polite and they're nice and they really care about their family."
Yeah, you're right. Like, those amongst
that is like, what?
That is why it's so hilarious, that dude who did it, this Mark Hoffman guy, because like you said, he's kind of got all of those attributes, at least externally. I can tell you, one of the great tenets of Mormonism is not to murder each other. It's like a big, it's a big deal, right? That's a particular passage in the Bible people take very seriously, is the don't kill anybody bit. And so him being that weird contradiction of, he has the accent, there's kind of an accent to it, you know, it's hard to explain, but there's kind of an accent to some people. He's got that. He's got the mannerisms. He's got the speech patterns. He's got all of that. He even has the kind of contriteness toward the end of like, he's sorry about it and he's fully confessing what he's done and all of that. But yet, but yet he seems stone cold about the killings. You know what I mean? Like, he just seems like, well, of course it's what I did. I had to do it. I was going to do it. What was I going to do? I had to do it.
And that's it. There's that friendly veneer on top of like a really, really like deadpan sociopathic kind of thing that it kind of makes you think, and especially, I was joking around before about the idea of the difference between the culture of what we imagine to be, you know, the inner lives of a Mormon community versus how they are looked at by various other communities, not only in terms of criticism of political outreach or social culture, but also being hated by other religions and being looked at as you know, a satanic cult, as other religions have referred to them. That, like, amongst it is that idea of like yes ma'am, no ma'am, like, I'm just trying to get home to my wife and my kids. And that guy has it. You almost wonder how much of all of this, how much of all of life, how much of communities and reputations are just kind of a facade, right? How much is real? What is real? What makes it real?
Right.
Is the idea that you're walking forward and doing these deeds the way that you see fit, is that what makes it real? Is it a critical mass of people doing that that creates a reputation? And what do we do when there is somebody that is obviously just a shattered, broken human being who goes so quickly to something so horrific?
Yeah, he's got this also, this is a complete side note, but he has this one unique attribute, which is Mark Hoffman looks like entirely different human beings in every photo that's ever been taken of him. And this is a thing that we talked about back then, and it's even more apparent at the end of that documentary, because they show a bunch of, during the credits, they show him then while in prison and then some other shots and then today. So he's still in there serving time today. He's not recognizable as any of the other photos in any of them. Like, he just looks like a different human being across the board. And I find that so odd for some reason. Everybody at least looks like this. We were talking about Hinckley yesterday, who shot Reagan.
Yeah.
He's, you know, in the psychiatric hospital where he's been the whole time, now has a YouTube channel and sings covers of 60s and 70s songs. He looks like Hinckley. Looks like John Hinckley.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't, you know, he's older, sure, but you can see that it's John Hinckley. This dude, Mark Hoffman, never looks the same. But the story is never, there's never a part of this that's about him pretending to be somebody he's not or not being recognized. That's not his MO. He's just Mark Hoffman when he's Mark Hoffman. But for some reason, he's this man of a million faces and nobody can figure it out. It's just, so that's, there's a little bit of weird lore with that. Not like, I don't mean something supernatural. I just mean he's known for like that weirdness. And then my other favorite thing about him is when I'm 16 or 17, I'm in what's called seminary. It's basically an hour of your school day. They do this at Catholic schools. You're in like a religious class for part of the day. We called it seminary.
Yeah, you're just learning. You're learning about the faith.
Yeah, you got church stuff going on. And so, you know, we usually would be at the mall at the arcade. But this, anyway, we had this class. And in there, I had a teacher. And he was not only the spitting image of Mark Hoffman in every way.
Oh, no.
But he also had a broken leg and was always in crutches. And that Hoffman dude was always in crutches because he blew his own legs up when his bomb went off. So there was this whole period of time where I had this teacher who looked exactly like Mark Hoffman, and to the point that he would play it up on Halloween and stuff and go around as Mark Hoffman.
Oh my God. Really?
I know. It's the weirdest freaking thing, man. Like that.
Wow.
It was such a local, such an insular event in so many ways. But
Justin is dressed today.
Oh, look at you.
Does that bet?
Yeah, I didn't realize that I didn't have my thing on because you guys called a little early.
No, I just figured you were pantsless and shirtless.
No, I've been sitting here on set like a good boy. All
Yeah, no, you look great. But anyway, yeah, it's just an odd thing top to bottom. And I'm really glad that you, A, watched it, B, liked it, and C, are recommending it, because I think it's one of the best Netflix, you know, these Netflix documentaries that we've been flooded with over the years. Mm-hmm. I think this is the best one. I really like it, like a lot. And
there's just always one episode of these documentaries that tends to just follow a really stupid thing that, you know, from the first moment, they're just going to spin their wheels and like, but what if it was the babysitter's brother? And then they go into it and you're like, but it's not, it's definitely not. And then they like at the end, it's like, we determined that the babysitter's brother was not a suspect. And then it's like, okay, why did we waste time on, like, that could have been 5 seconds. We looked into the babysitter's brother, not him. Move on. Let's keep going to the thing. Yeah. And what I loved about this one is that every element of it, first episode, focuses on this legitimately fascinating element of the Mormon religion, that it is so young that you could find contemporary documents that were written with modern ink that would around forever, and you're not trying to find some tablet or a miraculously kept a piece of parchment or something.
Yeah, like there that. And there's also, by the way, there's also a feeling generally during that time, and I think I even felt this thing of like, man, I could find my grandma's desk in her basement that's been collecting dust for 50 years. I could open that and probably find some Civil War diary, or I could find some, you know, you felt like you was in reach to be able to dip that far back into this time area, the 1800s, because you could. It's not like it was a trillion years ago. It's not like you said, it's not like Dead Sea Scrolls where you got to wait 4,000 years to find anything. Like it was, you're right.
It's that, around.
Yeah.
And that's why this guy's con, this guy's forgery was amazing because, you know, he gets this cachet doing it and then, you know, realizes that like he's making these forgeries that are built to fool all of the tools that you would use to detect a forgery. And so it passes cyclotron, it goes to the FBI, and it is legitimized by the FBI. And there's one dude who figures out the one tell that, you know, nobody else caught. And that's the only thing that starts to unravel everything about whether or not he did it. Although there was one thing that did kind of get me. For somebody that was as careful as he was, and let's take it at his word that he was trying to commit suicide when he set off the bomb in his own car, he sure did leave all of his documents and stuff in his house.
Yeah.
Like for somebody that is like as obsessively careful about everything, like I don't know whether or not this is like in that moment of weakness and madness that he decides to do it, but it's like, you know, if you're planning on killing yourself, you don't want to shred those, homie.
Yeah.
You don't want to toss those in some unmarked warehouse.
Yeah, we had shredders in '84. I don't know what he was thinking about that stuff, but he's a really interesting egg. I mean, the one of my favorite parts of the documentary. It's sort of side. It was not really side. It's part of the investigation. But that kind of hard boiled cop who loves to drink and party all the time. Like is a fish out of water in this city, yet he's working for the Salt Lake City Police Department in a detective position, is in charge of that case. I found his casework super fascinating, and none of that I didn't know about any of that stuff growing up. Like I didn't know about the investigation. I didn't know about penny bags in his waistcoat and his two chains. Didn't know about him. Like a lot of this stuff is new, so it was this really great combination of weird nostalgia for a weird moment in time in my life connected with a bunch of stuff I didn't know. It was great.
You know, the documentarians make a very deliberate choice for, I think, people who had no idea about any of this going in. In that first episode, there's a lot of kind of like suspicious music stingers and ominous archive clips of like people in the LDS, because you don't know, is this the LDS trying to suppress things? Mm-hmm. Are the murders that we're about to hear about, is this like something? You don't hear anybody from the LDS in contemporary times speak as a part of the modern documentary sources or whatever. And so you kind of initially deal with that. And then by the end of it, you're like, oh, the LDS was like a legit victim here. Like this is a malicious person that was actively attempting to erode the faith he was brought up in, and also make a ton of money, you know, or at the very least, at the most charitable, he was looking to make a lot of money on the back of eroding the faith and community that he had been brought up in.
Well, and also just imagine the power you would feel as that forger guy. He's convinced the FBI, local authorities, all testing procedures that exist for historical documentation verification, and potentially the hierarchy of the very faith that he grew up in, took part in, and now he's maybe got them fooled. They're supposed to know. They in, you know, in theory, you don't walk into the Pope and surprise the Pope, as an example. That's not that different than here. You're not supposed to walk into the first presidency of the Mormon Church and say, we have this document we think is real, and it's about this lizard.
It turns out Joseph Smith was a sentient elk.
Right. And then have them go,
like, what?
And they're
for real? And they're like, yep, look, here are his hoof prints.
And my guess is they probably were like, well, that doesn't sound right, but I guess all these tests are coming back. We probably ought to buy that document. I don't know what we're going to do. Like, that probably gave that dude such a charge to have that level of, like, it's like anybody. You get a charge out of fooling people with magic. You know, I don't want to say it's the same. It's not. But that charge you get out of out of an illusion to somebody and they buy it completely. If you're on the street and you do street magic and they go, holy shit, did he just really eat that quarter? Like that, that feeling is addictive. And I'm guessing this guy had the biggest charge out of like fooling everybody right up to the top. Until I got out of
hand. I cannot speak to this because I did not grow up in a particularly strict household, nor did I grow up in a religious one. But I would imagine that if you grow up in a very strict religious house, that there are elements of authority that are kind of universal of like, you know, screw you, dad, or screw you, mom, that you feel as you are growing up and you are understanding what authority is and you're understanding what reality is and you are pushing against those boundaries. That then also extends to this larger power structure that both figuratively and literally bestows your parents with power and status amongst the community and your friends and school and blah, 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 blah. And you get by the end of this, the idea that this monster of a human takes this tremendous toll on his community through the blood of people that he worked with and knew in part. Because and even the document forging initially came from this idea of F you dad. And F you dad also meant F you to the church, and F you to the church also meant, well, I believe that they have held back and lied about their history before, so who cares if maybe there's new things that they're holding back and lying about.
Yeah, for sure. It's quite a tale, and I think there's a lot to get out of it. It's easy to see the title is a little salacious, but if you get into it you'll get really good documentary work. That's why I liked it, I think, the most. Like, as much as I have this connection to it, what I liked the most is it wasn't just sensational.
I can't tell you how much I watched the first two episodes, and then I looked into the Netflix thing to see how many episodes it was, expecting it to be seven. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it was three. And I'm like, I'm at the finale.
Yeah,
like,
you're there.
Documentary series ever.
Yeah, more of those. More of those. Like, I actually feel like it's almost the perfect time because sometimes an hour and a half isn't enough for a big story. And seven to eight episodes is too many. So find this middle space. We live in the streaming era. Who cares if it's three episodes?
You are perfectly full with this story at the end of it.
Yeah, like, I was satisfied.
Like, there's not a moment, like, you might want to reach over and get more of something that you ate earlier, and you're like, meh,
yeah,
I had enough. Plus, I had enough of the friends. I had enough of the wife. I had enough of the crazy I'm walking here New York cop that happens to be in Salt Lake City. I've had enough of the document stuff. I've had enough of the LDS. I've had enough of the murderer. I've had enough of the current and the past. Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm ready to walk.
Yeah, for sure. The only other thing I would say, see if I can find his name, because I always forget his name. Crap. I mean, there's a guy in this called George Throckmorton. He's the forensic guy at the FBI that figures it out. What a great name. I can't find his name, but there was a local news dude. There he is, Rod Decker. So he's a former Utah Channel 2, I think, was the affiliate he was on. And he was like this he was our local hard-hitting dude who would go out and really get in people's faces. And everyone loved Rod Decker. Well, he's in this thing because he was then covering it and was a big part of it. I can't tell you what catharsis I got out of seeing Rod Decker being a part of the ultimate explanation of this thing he was investigating all those years ago. Like, there was a real coming full circle Rod Decker moment for me. And he annoyed me in my teens because he was an adult and he seemed like he was professional and I was sort of a nerd and didn't care about this stuff. But I just want to hug Rod Decker now and go, dude, you did the good hard work and here you are now talking about it. Well done, freaking former Channel 2 reporter Rod Decker.
He's great. And just that peak, part of the secret weapon of the documentary is that they always, at any moment, just get to go back to 80s Salt Lake City local news, which is its own treat between the hairstyles and the accents and the earnestness. And that dude comes in singing, I presume, the Utah State song.
I don't know. I don't remember.
He's just earnestly singing this song like by himself, like out in this remote, like a location. And it's just, it's so earnest and endearing. Yeah. Every moment, every shoulder pad, every teased out strand of television news hair. It was amazing. Great.
Teased out television news hair should be today's title. Someone submit that as a title. All right. Well, I've really enjoyed this discussion. And look, chat room, you know, they can't say anything about anything in there. They're good. Everyone enjoyed it.
No, they figured it out. I'm the tadpole's favorite. I'm doing the best at this, and everybody loves me.
Yeah, Universal. Of course.
I'm the first TMS guest to have 100% approval, which is
100% approval rating.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well done.
Exactly.
Anything going on in your world that now those people that approve so much want to hop over and make sure they check out?
No, I don't need to plan anything. I think I know when I'm not wanted with an audience. So I'll see you guys next week.
Well, no problem. And by the way, there's one last look at that dude in our chat. He's the guy with the Pennyworth clothes, Brian. You might enjoy a nice look at that guy.
Oh yeah. Oh, he totally is. He's like Sir John Gielgud mixed with Alfred Hitchcock and a dose of Rich Uncle Pennybags.
Yeah, and he's weird. Here's this.
The jury will now retire.
Justin, have a fantastic week.
Wait, hold on a minute. I do.
Oh, shit.
For what?
He told me he was done, so I cut it out because I had already had the button up. Ah.
Can you get it back?
I can, but hold on. I don't know if he wants to.
It'll be great if that was on purpose.
It might have been. Well, I'll text him and find out. While we listen to this mashup. Yes, that's right. We got a bonus mashup this week.
Oh, I love this one. Yeah.
TMS Origins, where did Pumba come from? You're about to find out. Enjoy. Lion King spinoff taps Rob Lowe as Simba.
A spinoff?
A spinoff is what they're calling it. So here's your cast. Rob Lowe, Gabrielle Union, James Earl Jones, Max Charles, Atticus Schaefer. Great name. Atticus, rather.
Atticus.
It's a spinoff of the beloved animated film The Lion King. At least six characters from the 1994 film will appear. Lowe will voice Simba opposite Union's Nala, while James Earl Jones and Ernie Sabella will reprise their roles from the movie as Mufasa and Pumbaa.
Because Jonathan Taylor Thomas is really hard to get a hold of these days.
Yeah, he's kind of...
his busy schedule.
Yeah. Was that who that was? I guess it was, wasn't it?
I thought he was the voice of Simba.
I want to say you're right. Let's see. Rafiki and Timon, played by Kerry Payton and Kevin Schoen. But that's not who played Timon.
Timon was a producer's guy. It was...
What's his name? Birdcage.
Yes, right.
Danny Cherokee.
Chicken Crap Money.
Jerry Von Flattery. I don't know. I can't remember his name.
I'm just going to have fun and just let you go with that.
I think someone... Nathan Lane, geez.
Nathan Lane. And I can't remember who was Pumbaa, but Pumbaa's not coming back, so...
No Pumbaa. Rafiki, though, was played by...
Did Pumbaa die and I forgot?
Pumbaa was played by Benson.
No. Benson was the bird.
No, not the bird. The bird was...
Robert Guillaume was the...
Was the monkey.
Oh, I'm sorry, was the monkey, yeah, but not Pumbaa.
Yeah, but Rafiki is the monkey, isn't it?
Rafiki is the monkey. Pumbaa is the warthog.
Right. What I'm saying is that Rafiki is being played by somebody named Kerry Payton who is not Benson.
I'm still hung up on Pumbaa. What happened to Pumbaa?
Pumbaa is gone. They ate him. I don't know.
Maybe Pumbaa died.
Did you know that Ferris Bueller played Pumbaa when he was an adult? Adult Pumbaa? Did you know
you
that?
You mean adult Simba.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, not there is no adult Pumbaa. You know, maybe it's...
How many people are just giving up and switched off their...
That's really bad. That's really bad. I saw where the goof happened, though. It was me.
Yeah, we said right at the beginning... Well, also, we said right at the beginning that Pumbaa was coming back, that Pumbaa, you know, the James Earl Jones and so-and-so reprising their voices as... Mufasa and Pumbaa.
Right. But then we answered the question right away.
So we first completely missed the fact that you said Pumbaa's coming back.
Yes.
At the very beginning.
And then later I said, well, Benson plays Pumbaa and I meant Rafiki. But then I said, no, Rafiki, the monkey, as if I didn't ever say Pumbaa, which I did, which you were correcting me on. Like it just splattered. Yeah. It was like a freaking blast of a shotgun after that. It was all bad.
Which is like you basically are watching the train like, and then it goes completely off the rails.
Yeah, that's something else.
I love that clip.
If anyone was wondering.
TMS in a, like boiled down to its barest essence.
Yep. And it's we want to thank TMS Mashups Jamie for mining this fantastic content.
Yes.
Tomorrow we'll play another one. It's part three of my time in Resident Evil, and apparently it's his favorite. He thinks it's his favorite we've ever done. So, I mean, you know, probably some of that. Probably,
yeah,
some of that.
Probably.
Anyway, well done. let's now be done with the show. We're out of here. Tomorrow will be Wednesday, which is all the usual fun. So come back for that, please. Mm-hmm. And
watch as Scott, Nicole, and Brian all bring the same thing to Recommental.
That's right. It may happen. I'm so not sure.
It definitely won't happen with me. I know what you guys are recommendling, or what either of you could, and I'm staying away. I got something else.
I'm planning on it. I don't know what she's doing. I may want to text her and just say, what are you planning on? You know, just to make sure we don't.
Do a rock, paper, scissors thing, and one of you guys gets it.
Yeah, because the funny thing is, I'm not as far as you are anyway. And she's probably
done. How can you recommend something when you're two episodes, one fourth of the way in?
My plan was to be done with it by now, but I've had no time. And so now that I'm not, it's like, should I even recommend it? I mean, I already love it is the problem. Mm-hmm. So
it is so good.
I'm half recommending it. I don't know. I really like it. Anyway.
Well, if it doesn't stick the landing.
What did the jury want to say?
Cecil Hotel.
Yeah, that Cecil Hotel.
Speaking of overdrawn Netflix docuseries.
Oh, that bummed me out. It could have been so much better.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. All right, let's get out of here. Do you have music we can play here at the end of the show?
I guess.
Well, let's do it then.
Ryan wrote in and said, I'm entering the year that I become the answer to everything. You guessed it, 42.
Wow.
Could you play either A New Beginning by Wolfie's Just Fine or The Longest Time, Billy Joel cover by Ann Reburn? Well, yes, Ryan, I can play one of those. And I'm going to pick the second one because it's a cover. And that's what we do here at the end of the show is we play a cover. This is a cover of The Longest Time by Ann Reburn. You know, that's that doo-wop song that Billy Joel did. And it's one of my least favorite Billy Joel songs.
Yeah, me too.
But I really like this cover by Ann Reburn. It's all her. You know, she doesn't have a little doo-wop band behind her. But I like this a lot. From a single that she released in 2018, here's Ann Reburn and The Longest Time.
And this is for our listener.
Happy birthday to you.
All right, well done. Here it is.
Happy birthday.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow right here on TMS.
Bum, 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 whoa. For the longest time. Whoa. Longest for the longest. If you said goodbye to me tonight, woo-hoo. There would still be music left to write. What else could thoughts at the start. time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Poo poo.